Welcome to the Relationship Manifesto podcast series.
Hi, welcome to the Relationship Manifesto podcast series. We're up to episode 47, almost half a hundred. There's a term for half a hundred, isn't there? What is it?
50.
God, it's going to be another one of those sessions. My name's Chris Smith, Shambles Guru on the interweb, and the voice you heard there was fortunately, was Dr. Stephen Whitehead again.
Hello.
And we are fortunate enough, we have a guest with us today, and the guest is Carlton Rounds. And Carlton's also looking at me smiling. I think I'm outnumbered today. I'm not sure what's going to happen. Carlton did confess to me that he's not easily spooked. So my challenge over the next 30 minutes is, can we spook Carlton?
Please frighten the guest.
Yeah, okay.
That's yeah. The game.
It's not,
we'll do our best.
And it's not even Halloween. And I think what I'm going to do on much of this is to sort of step aside, because I know that Stephen and Carlton know each other, and Stephen probably knows the more apt questions or topics to discuss. Stephen, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. You come in anything that needs clarification. We get into any area that tends to be a bit techie in the context of what we're going to be discussing. You come in, Chris. But yeah, welcome, Carlton. It's great to have you here. Thanks for coming all the way from America for this podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. Yes, thank you.
The check is in the post.
I'm very tired. The flight was incredibly long.
Yeah, you didn't know we were going to reimburse business class airfares.
No, I didn't. Oh, thank you, Steve.
Oh, but you can't do it after the fact.
Well.
So yeah, welcome to Chiang Mai. Welcome to Thailand. The reason why we've asked you, of course, is because you have a particular expertise, knowledge and experience in a particular area of relationships. And this podcast is about relationships, Relationship Manifesto. So what I'm going to lead off by is just you telling us what that aspect is, the organization that you head up.
Okay.
And why you're actually here in Chiang Mai, because I think our audience would be quite interested to know about that.
All right.
I
am the founder and executive director of a nonprofit organization, or an NGO, called Volunteer Positive. And Volunteer Positive is the first international service organization for people infected and affected by HIV. So a couple of ways to think of us would be a short-term HIV positive Peace Corps. Since Peace Corps was sued for discriminating against people with HIV.
I didn't know that.
Yes, they were sued by the ACLU, actually by one of my board members, who tested positive while he was on assignment in Eastern Europe. And he wasn't ill, so there was not a medical reason. They call it separation. When from the Peace Corps, when you're asked to leave. So his dream was to be a global nomad, to be a change agent in the world. And they said, literally came in and said, oh, you're positive, pack your bags, you have 2 days to say goodbye. And threw him out like a piece of garbage, which of course, if you imagine, anyone who receives news of having a life-threatening illness, you would imagine that organizations that work in capacity building and human rights and
humanitarian
challenges would have perhaps been a little softer.
Yeah.
And on his way home, he thought, my future is over. And they separated him from the Peace Corps. And he contacted the ACLU and sued them and won.
The ACLU is?
American Civil Liberties Union. Okay. They're the group in the U.S. that you don't want contacting you if you've done something egregious from a human rights perspective. Yeah. And he won. his case.
Right.
So he went into the world to be a change agent, and he still became a change agent, but really in a very different way than he had thought. His name is Jeremiah Johnson. And it just so happened, I was working for an international service organization as a senior management person, and I was at my doctor waiting to see him for my quarterly checkup, where they, I'm HIV positive, so, you know, they check your blood, and, you know, you go in and you get a head-to-toe, make sure you're all right. And I've been working in the field of international education, service, human rights for over 20 years, more than that. Though I've been positive for, let's say, 10 years, and probably positive more, but I would say I've known for 10, it was never something I disclosed in my professional environment, because one would never know how that could impact where you would be literally allowed to travel because of so many international travel restrictions on people with HIV. So there's a lot of pressure to hush up about it. Even in my experience of working in places where I was working with people who were positive, it would be difficult for me to say, me too, and we'll get through this together, because I could have lost my job. So I'm in the doctor's waiting room, and I pick up PAWS magazine. Did you know, HIV positive people have their own magazine?
They have their own magazine.
Yes. Yeah. It's sort of like Ebony, if you're a black woman.
Okay.
And I don't know if you're a black positive woman, which if you get positive, I'm not quite sure, but PAWS magazine. So I picked it up, and on the front of it was a picture of Jeremiah and his story. And I felt my blood pressure just went, right through the roof of my head. And I stole the magazine and brought it back to my office, and I went to the head of the organization I worked for. It was a really remarkable person and significant in the field of international service. And put the magazine on his desk, and I said, "This really, really makes me angry. This is not okay." And he said, "I agree with you." And he said, "Get Jeremiah on the phone." So we got Jeremiah on the phone. Of course, Jeremiah has been contacted by the entire world because he's been forced into this visible role. And I said, you don't know me, Jeremiah, but I work for this organization. And wherever you want to go in the world when you're ready, we'll take you. All you do is pay for your plane ticket. We're going to take care of the rest up to 3 months, because we were a short-term organization. And I helped him go to Peru and work with an LGBT organization, the first LGBT center in Peru, which was doing tremendous amount of HIV outreach, because it's very severe in Peru, the epidemic. And through preparing Jeremiah, he had a lot of questions, and I've worked with lots of volunteers before, and he had a lot of questions that were different. And I began to prepare him, what about meds? What if this happens? Where do I go? What do I do? And we got through all the questions. They were great questions. But I realized that these are questions I had myself that I always had figured out on my own. And so I disclosed to my whole organization at the time. And of course, they looked at me, and I'm tall and big and thick and look like I probably just came off the rugby field. And for them to see me as an HIV positive person, they worked with me for years and certainly didn't have an opinion that I needed any sort of extra help, support, accommodation, or anything. In fact, most of them would come to me for that. And that's how this seed began. And shortly after that, and Jeremiah and I became friends because, of course, we were bonding over our mutual roles in the world, I suppose. And I admired him so much for his courage. And one thing to complain is another thing to get the ACLU on board and win. A lot of people don't win. They just get their lives ruined by being in long, drawn-out lawsuits.
Yeah, sure.
And
how old is Jeremiah?
Jeremiah is now 20, 28 or 29, but he was 25 at the time.
Mm. Young guy.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, from Colorado. Bright-eyed, hopeful, idealistic, wanting to serve his country and serve the world as a diplomat, as most Peace Corps workers, I think, see themselves, or hopefully will. So I began to think, and I decided, after surveying international service organizations, I asked them, I serve on an advisory board for the U.S. on international service through the Brookings Institution. And I asked a large room of people, how many people have had HIV, openly HIV-positive volunteers doing international service in their organizations? And there was not one hand that went up. And I thought, well, I know so many survivors like me, long-term survivors, healthy, strong. We see our doctors more than most people see their doctors, so we're actually more on top of our own needs as compared to some others. And some having been close or beyond the point of the precipice a few times. You know, when death is your advisor, and when you're very young and you have to face your mortality, and you come close to death a few times, and you're brought back, and then you go to the edge again and you're brought back, you know things about the world, I think. I think there's something special in that. And since this is the first generation of survivors in this way,
yes,
I felt as though perhaps there was a place for us in the field of international service. So I launched this organization called Volunteer Positive in order to find HIV-positive people who are medically stable, and that's a broad category, who have a desire to do short-term international service, because I want their contributions to be visible. I want other HIV-positive people in the world to see and say, in my culture, this may not exist so much, but I saw this team of HIV-positive people, and they were big and healthy, and they were lifting heavy things, and they were working really hard, and they got along well together, and they weren't ashamed. And create a counter-narrative to the lives of dependency that many HIV-positive people who are survivors have been pushed into. Because you depend on the drugs. Mm. You depend on where the drugs come from. You depend on the funders. You depend on your service agency. You depend on your family. If you make too much money, you lose your benefits. So your sense of personal agency has been ravaged.
Let me come into what's happening now, because you're in Thailand and you're doing a specific work here, specific role. Tell us who you brought with you to Thailand.
And
what's the purpose of the visit?
Well, it seems unreal that it's actually happening, because I've been planning it for 2.5 years. And in the process of planning Volunteer Positive's inaugural program, I've had to myself come out as positive in ways that I never dreamed of doing. And as I've done so, I've learned some really important things. That the more you tell your story, the more people are familiar, the less barriers they put up to you. They don't feel the need to protect me when they see me and they know me, and they don't say, "Oh, you're positive. Maybe you should sit in the easier chair." You know, I'm changing how they see it. And you know, it's a scary disease, but it's not the way it used to be.
Mm.
And I guess that's the point: is we need to update our idea of what it means to be living with a virus.
Mm.
So, Volunteer Positive, this inaugural program, is a nearly 3-week program that I'm bringing. There's about 12 volunteers. 10 of them are from the U.S., one is from Malaysia, the other is from Canada. Mostly men, one woman, ranging in ages from 31 to 65. Some who have been positive, 5 years, and some who have been positive in almost 30 years. Which means when you put all of that experience together, that's an awful long time learning to live with shifting, difficult, challenging circumstances. Mm. And now that there have been a relaxation on travel barriers to people with HIV, you can travel. Because before, you may not be allowed in the country if you're a positive.
Yes.
So you can travel. And Chiang Mai seems like an ideal place, and I've seen, since setting up the program here and working with the community, how ideal it really is. It's a complicated culture. Stigma, marginalization is as complicated and as severe as it is anywhere in the world, but different. Mm. How stigma operates for the majority of my Western volunteers versus how stigma operates in Thai culture is different. I don't think either one is better, but it's fascinating. Sometimes you learn more, you learn about how you relate to your own stigma when you learn about how a culture operates theirs.
Yes.
So each of the volunteers is placed with a local nonprofit organization who I approached over the last 2 years and asked if they would be willing to have an openly HIV positive person. And what I didn't want is for them to say, sure, and we're going to treat them just like everyone else and no one will know they're positive. Because that's not the point.
Yes.
Because then you never challenge the image of the sick, dependent HIV person. Mm. Really wanted them to be able to be here as positive, visible, and powerfully.
Mm.
And what that means with each of these different organizations is different.
Mm. Give me an example of one of the organizations.
Well, one of the organizations that we're working with is Empower Foundation.
Mm.
And Empower Foundation works with sex workers, female sex workers. And, you know, being a group that has been disproportionately affected by HIV in Thailand, the stigma of HIV in that community is significant. You know, it threatens your ability to make a living.
Mm.
And one of our volunteers is interning for 2.5 weeks or 2 weeks with Empower.
Mm.
Now, the volunteer who's there, the American volunteer, she's from Connecticut, and so fantastic to be able to say to your international volunteer when they say, "What's my placement? What's my placement?" Because you have to be a bit of a yenta. You have to be a matchmaker when you do this work, because there's all these different NGOs. They have all these different personalities and dynamics. And then you have these individuals from all over the place that are coming into your organization for the first time. Lots of different expectations. And matching them with their skills and their interests and also with their, you know, their spirit is important. And it was so great to be able to tell Kate that she was going to be working at a place where sex workers are organized, where they have sick days.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a very positive organization in terms of its culture towards sex work.
And empowering for women.
And empowering for women, absolutely.
And every day as I've watched Kate, as we've gone through orientation to prep before you go into your placements, the work and the readings that I've given all of the volunteers about Thailand and Thai culture and specific NGOs before they've come, then the orientations in country before we meet our partners. And then to watch them step across that threshold from what we've talked about and what we've thought about into the reality of the placement and the great questions and being able to wear the stigma when somebody else can't. I mean, I'm a foreigner. I can wear it. I'm not going to live here. So I can take some on, perhaps, that might have different consequences for someone who's in the immediate community. But still, I'm changing the narrative.
Let's just move it on to two other aspects of that immediate community. One is the gay community out here in Thailand. You're gay. You're contacting gay men here constantly through your work while you're here. What do you see? What are the similar and different issues for gay men in Thailand as opposed to gay men in the West, if you like? First of all, in terms of coming out, and secondly, in terms of relationships.
That's a question with a lot of layers.
It is. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I think
trust me, Carl. He's not sorry at all.
He was trying to throw me a hardball. Wait, am I spooked?
I'm spooked. Yeah, he's not spooked, boys and girls.
Not spooked at all.
Actually, what I do wish the listeners could see, Carlton, is your face, because as he's telling you about these stories, his face is actually alight with enthusiasm. You love what you're doing, don't you? I think you do. And you just look so positive about the whole thing. Yeah.
It's nice to feel that you have your own sense of agency again.
Yeah.
You know, that you're driving your own bus.
Yes.
And that's one of the reasons why Volunteer Positive is so important to me, is no one was doing it, and no one was going to do it.
Okay, come back to the question.
Okay, come back to the question.
Yeah. I'm now going to start keeping you on track now. We've got gay men living in Thailand, from what you've seen. I know you've not been in Thailand that often, though. You do live in Kuala Lumpur, so you're part of the Asian expat community, if you like.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into Malaysia, because I know there's a whole... We could have another podcast on that.
Yeah, very different.
But in terms of what you're seeing here in Thailand, what are the first impressions about gay men being gay men? Secondly, gay men being positive, HIV positive.
This conversation has actually come up with the volunteers this past week, because it's come up in our placements. Our HIV placement partners are Christian outreach groups, are Empower, are working with an orphanage. They run really a comprehensive field of any group, any NGO that's affected by HIV.
Right.
And they're all coming at it from a different angle. People here don't want to talk about HIV, even at the LGBT sort of center.
Mm.
When you disclose and say, I'm positive, it's not their inclination to ask you questions about it.
Right.
Because it might be I'm older, so maybe they'll look at me and say, it's impolite. There are cultural dynamics that are going on that maybe I don't fully understand.
Sure.
But we don't see those conversations happening. And how that relates to the gay men, being gay in the West seems to fit into a certain box, you know. And you go to a gay pride parade, and there's a gay bar, and there's a gay pride flag, and, you know, there's so many symbols. And if you put all those behaviors and symbols and sort of cultural tags together, that's how you find the gay community. The fluidity of gender identity and sexual orientation in Thailand is remarkable.
Yeah,
because in a way, sometimes I'm talking to people, and I know from a Western perspective, I feel like I'm talking to a gay man.
Mm.
And if I probe a little deeper in their Thai, for example, I find out that by his definition, he's not a gay man.
Sure.
And then I wonder...
He could be having sex with men.
But he may be having sex with men. Or he may be having sex with someone who is third gender. So I love the idea that there's such a spectrum here.
But it can be confusing for Westerners, because we can't box it or tick it against a particular category of identity, can we? And we like to do that, Westerners.
We like to arrange the pieces and just so.
What about the what you call the third gender, or the katoi, or the lady boy? Because that's quite a visible community in Thailand.
I'd
probably almost call it a community. But I mean, what's your first impressions of that in terms of, again, both it being in terms of HIV positive katoi and katoi, the very visibility of them here, because you won't see many in London or in Manchester or Birmingham or Alabama.
There's the difference between being accepted and being tolerated.
Yeah.
And Thai culture seems to me to be very tolerant. I don't feel threatened here. If I hold my partner's hand and we walk down the street, really people don't even look. In the U.S., they would look and someone would make a comment, either thumbs up because they're super cool with it, or, you know, or something negative. But there is something wonderful almost to being invisible. You know, you don't feel that special. You're just holding the guy's hand, you're walking down the street. But if I wanted to marry him, if I was Thai and I wanted to marry him in a Thai ceremony and be recognized, there would be some very strong and, I would say, negative feedback to wanting to change those cultural traditions. When we've, and when I'm thinking about people who are third gender, I don't think they're living lives of abundance, but they're not being hunted down.
Well, it has got a lot more positive over the years. I mean, I was reading in the Bangkok Post only recently about a Khoi couple getting married, or Khoi and a straight guy, if you like, getting married and being accepted by the family. It's unusual, and that's why it was in the papers. But it is indicative of a larger shift, if you like, a greater sense of awareness or acceptance. So it's still got a long way to go. I want to come on to the issue of relationships, because, and I want to pick up on two terms you introduced early on. One is infected, and one is affected. And can you just explain what they mean?
Sure. Infected means you have the virus.
Right.
It's in your body. Even if it's managed and undetectable, you're still HIV positive, it means you have the virus. Affected means you may not have the virus in your body, but HIV has impacted your life. Now, I think of it, there's a great argument that, you know, every human being is HIV affected. Because you can't not be affected by it. But I always think of it as sort of concentric circles around an HIV positive person. So I would consider, for example, my mother would be an HIV affected person. She doesn't carry the virus. I'm her son. And I'm not sure at first she saw herself that way, but she certainly does now. She's sort of politically grown with with my diagnosis. It's another one of the benefits of doing this work is you've got to come out to everybody because they're going to find out. And in doing so, you affect more people. So that's it. I would say another, I'll give you another example. Right after I launched Volunteer Positive, I really didn't know what kind of emails I would be getting. I thought I'd find 100 people like Jeremiah Johnson who just want to go abroad and serve. And one of the third email I got was from a woman who had taken care of her son and she had lost him to HIV. And she said, I want to go with you because I'm part of the HIV community. I took care of my son for years and he's gone. And I can't go someplace with people who haven't lived that way because they'll never understand how deeply I connect with the experience.
Okay, well, now we're into the realm of relationships. So we've got a, we take a scenario. We've got we'll take a straight couple. And the guy's found himself HIV positive. His partner, female, isn't. What from your experience of this, what do you think of the sort of typical dynamics that's going to emerge in that relationship as a consequence of this new reality?
Depends on where they live in the world. It depends on if they, how much they understand about transmission of the virus, their access to really good medical, truthful medical care, clear, cutting-edge medical
care. Can they find that on your website?
Volunteer Positive is not a place where, if you were newly infected, you would go to find out about transmission.
Okay.
We are sort of, you know, we got it already. We know about
You're out there.
We're really like a diplomatic corps, a service corps. Now, people will, frankly, I get emails saying, this happened to me, what do I do? And I refer them places, but that's not our role. But a straight couple and a serodiscordant relationship is one of the terms that's used. Because if you are positive, they call you seropositive. If you are negative, it's seronegative. So if you're positive and negative, they say serodiscordant.
Now, when we were talking in the car earlier, mm-hmm. On the way here, you explained to me about the package, if you like, of pills that an HIV-positive person will be taking, mm-hmm. in order to reduce or render invisible almost the virus in their body. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Correct.
Okay. But there is what in that package, there is one medicine that can be taken that people who are not HIV positive can take. Mm-hmm. And that itself will act as a major barrier towards HIV infection.
Correct.
Can you say a bit more about that and
sure.
tell us what it is?
The term that's used for that is called PrEP, P-R-E-P. And it's based under the idea that treatment is prevention. If you look at people's behavior, no matter what group you're part of, straight, gay, in the middle, human sexuality is a very difficult thing to change, sexual behavior. So trying to find a way to knock the virus out without having to radically change human behavior is, most experts would agree, is the ideal. Mm. So an HIV-positive person, and I'll speak in general terms because each person's physiology is really different. I'll talk about me because okay. I know me best.
Okay.
I'm HIV-positive. I take my medication. It's made up of three different medications. They work in three different ways to block the replication of the virus.
Right.
I get checked every 3 or 4 months in order to make sure that my body hasn't, or the virus hasn't figured out a tricky way around that, and stay compliant, which means I do not miss my medications. I mean, I don't miss taking them.
Mm.
I take them all the time, because anytime you miss them, you create a window for them to the virus to outsmart the medication. So you take it every day. My viral count at the moment, or viral load as they call it, is zero. Means undetectable. It's still there. It just means that medically they just can't find it.
Mm.
And my T cells, which are your fighter cells, are beyond the normal range. So I'm healthy as a horse.
Right.
Now, there's so little HIV in my blood that if I were to engage in fluid exchange with another person who is HIV negative, it would be exceptionally difficult for me to transmit the virus. Nearly impossible.
Right.
In fact, condom usage on its own is less effective statistically than me with no condoms on full meds.
Mm, that's interesting.
And the politics around that are very interesting.
Mm.
Now, if you want to have absolutely, I mean, if you take your meds and you basically can't transmit it, and on top of that, you're wrapping it up, you can pretty much do whatever you want with anybody and not worry about transmission.
But there is one element of your medication that
a
non-HIV positive person can take.
Right, and that's what PrEP is. PrEP is...
What's the name of the med...
I can't tell you off the top of my head because it's not one. It's not... The three are types of medication.
Okay.
And what it is one of those three components, because if you don't have the HIV, you don't need all three.
No,
you just need one.
Okay.
And you take it on a daily basis. If you don't have HIV, you don't have to continually take it because it's not fighting HIV. It's just creating a barrier in you.
Now you
so that if you were exposed...
Yeah.
The medication would do what the medication does for people with HIV, knock out the virus.
Now, you're in a long-term, I think it's a long-term relationship.
Knock on wood, yes.
Knock on wood.
Yeah.
And I get, having met your partner,
mm-hmm.
who's an interesting guy anyway, like yourself, and he's not HIV positive.
No.
He also happens to be, can I say, he's Malaysian and he's Muslim.
Yeah.
So he's an interesting guy, this. Fascinating bloke. But aside from that, I mean, I get the sense from the little bit I know of both of you as a couple, that brief time I met, is that this HIV scenario that you're both in,
yeah,
is now part of your relationship dynamic.
Yeah, I would say so, and I think that's a very interesting way to put it. If you're not careful, HIV can become your life.
Right.
But I prefer to think of it as, and I've run into people in the field who I would consider HIV activists, and some people have accused me of being one, and I suppose I am. But I don't think the lessons that HIV positive people learn and share are really about HIV. I think they're really about overcoming any challenge, health challenge, or that marginalizes you, that stigmatizes you. HIV positive people working with long-term cancer survivors, we have a lot in common. How do you turn your face into injustice and stand there? That's not something I learned just because of HIV.
So in terms of relationships, the there is an element of sharing a situation which has got political, personal dimensions.
Yeah. And it's transferable.
Because,
sometimes we're talking about what it means to be an interfaith couple.
And some of the
dangers of that in repressive cultures. And that translates right over to, how am I going to talk to my doctor about what I need for my treatment? How do I ask for what I need, and how do I carve my way through? Or how do I face job discrimination?
I know we're coming to the end of the time here. Which is a shame, because it would have been great to have gone on longer and longer, because really this is quite fascinating, and I know there's a lot we can all learn from this. Just say how people can contact your organization.
Sure. Volunteer Positive. It can be reached at volunteerpositive.org on the World Wide Web. If someone wants to email me directly, it's Carlton, CARLTON, at volunteerpositive.org. And one thing I'd like to stress is that Volunteer Positive is about how we are affected as a community by HIV. My volunteers are mostly HIV positive people, but not all of them. They are HIV affected. So think about the people in your lives who may be positive, living with the virus for a long time in particular, and ask them, have they thought about stepping out of how the world has been constructed for them? Stepping across that threshold again, maybe dreaming the way that they dreamed when they were teenagers, that they wanted to go change the world. And know that there's a way to do it, and that you're helping them stay healthy, reconnect to who they are, experience their own power. I mean, if you really want people like me to live a long time, give me a chance to mean something in the world.
Thank you, Carlton. I'm going to cut it there. It's a nice finish point. Carlton, really, many thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you,
Stephen. It's been great to see you again. And this podcast will be around a long time, long after we've all gone. And people hopefully will get a lot from it. Thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome.
Chris?
Brilliant. Thanks, Carlton. You didn't get spooked at all.
No. I'm just excited to go back and work with the volunteers now.
I love your enthusiasm. I must admit that. I really do. It's very, your outlook is very so positive.
Yeah,
I don't mean a pun there, but I mean it is. No, it is so positive, isn't it?
It is positive.
About life. Positive.
P squared.
But you know, your zest for life and working with these people is really, it's quite heartwarming, really, to see that. It's that's the end of that bit. Anyway, right.
Can have any infirmity or malady and come hang out with us, because we've seen it all.
Ah, thank you. Right. My mentality does get questioned. Ladies and gents, thanks for listening. You can leave comments on the blog at relationshipmanifesto.postress.com as normal. And thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Have fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This recording is part of a Relationship Manifesto podcast series with Chris Smith and Stephen Whitehead.